David Beckham. Football royalty, fashion royalty, whiskey royalty, and of course, literary royalty. Despite his probably quite busy schedule, David has somehow found time to author seven, yes, seven books. My World, My Side, My Story, Both Feet on the Ground, Beck's Talking. One self-titled and making it real, David Beckham Soccer Skills. Yep, he wrote a soccer skills book. And today, we're reading one of these books, 2001's My World with the brilliant comedian Steve Ajayi. So let's see what the book club thought of it in today's Football Book Club.
I don't know how you guys read these books, like week after week.
I cried at this book.
What?
I remember it so clearly, I was eating a Lion Bar at the time.
I bought the infamous sarong when I was out with Mel B's ex-husband, Jimmy, in Paris, which I think was a prelude to Emily in Paris.
It sounds like Steve McLaren invented the Fitbit.
Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where instead of literary classics, each episode we read another footballer's autobiography. Less Martina Cole, more Ashley Cole. Wow, that one went down badly. Oh, yeah.
We haven't got Jack here to flag it off this week, so jeez. I will just say that was bad.
Do you do a different one each week?
We do a different one each week. We do a different one as regular listeners know, Steve.
That's actually a good idea. I wish we did the same one every week. Just exactly yeah. The same
it's,
one.
So. It's only that one sent in by Chris Brazier, our listener, that just every single week. You got any better than Steve? You got any better?
No, I liked it. I actually think it's quite impressive that you're coming up with new ones each time.
You could have bloody laughed. It was thanks to Chris Brazier for sending that one in. Thank you, Chris. Sorry everyone hated it. I'm James Bug, and over the weeks, we'll be reading classics such as Colin Todd's Toddy and former West Brom manager Pepe Mel's thriller The Liar, which is a genuine book, sadly, however, in Spanish. Anyway, today we are reading a noughties relic from probably the most famous footballer we've ever done on the show. Surely.
Yeah,
way bigger than Gary Monk. Surely. We are reading David Beckham's My World, and joining me to read it, as always, are James Baljan.
Hello.
Natasha Frisco.
Hello.
And welcome to the show, comedian, writer, and crow. Welcome to the show, co-creator of ITV2's Buffering, it's the one and only Steve Ajayi.
Hey. Hey. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no problem at all. How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you. Yeah, thanks for making me read this book.
No problem. And it's a real joy of ours whenever we get to send one of these books to someone's house. I never know how they're going to react afterwards. If they're going to be fuming when they come on the podcast and even making them read it. But
it's been sat on my lounge for about 2 weeks now. And anyone who comes over is like, why have you got David Beckham's autobiography from 2001? And it actually takes a lot of explaining.
Great conversation starter, though. Great conversation starter.
Yeah, it's ruined a lot of dates. But also, the front of my book was made out, obviously bought to someone, and it says, "To Mandy, a little something to brighten up those miserable days. Happy birthday, little sis." So, I mean, I've read the book. This isn't going to improve any of your miserable days.
But I don't know about yours, but half of mine is photos of him topless, so it definitely improved my day.
I think that could be it, Steve. Steve, maybe we're not the target audience for it, but you are right. It is, generally, Tash isn't lying, it's 100 pages book, 100 pages photos. I think it's a pretty good balance for the future. I think more ones should be like that. Mm-hmm. You're big
also,
reader.
I like how a lot of books make the mistake of spacing the photos out through the book, but he just says, nah, the whole back half is photos. Whole back half.
That is true. Yeah, it really is relentless. Big reader, Steve?
Yeah,
in general?
Not of football books, but I try and read one book every month. I don't know.
Okay. This was your book this month?
No, I've squeezed this in. This is an extra one.
Okay. Very nice. And was it, this was your first ever footballer's autobiography?
No, I have. I think I read Roy Keane's. I read Sir Alex Ferguson's.
I'm sensing a pattern here.
Yeah. Possibly United fan?
I also read Ronan Keating's, not a footballer, but a very, very good autobiography.
What was that like? Good.
Well, it was a roller coaster, to be honest.
Get ready for this kind of stuff.
He's a comedian. He's a professional comedian.
Steve, we've known you for a long time, James and I. Tash, your first time meeting Steve today. Mm-hmm. Tash, Steve, Tash. No, Jack, who's usually on the podcast. He has left us a little message, though. If I can just play it right now.
Hi, guys. I just want to say I've read this David Beckham book. I am so excited to talk about it. It's going to be so, so good. I have made so many notes. Oh, my God. Really looking forward to the recording. So see you later. Bye. Yep,
let's get rid of that. Yep, that's serves you right, Jack. Serves you right. Trying to oust me from presenting that Craig Bellamy episode. So there we go. There we go, Jack, your punishment. You are now, you're gone. Steve, do you want to replace Jack forever?
I thought that's what was already happening.
Okay, sure. God, then good, good. You are now the new member of the book club. Let's get into it. Let's get into your first book. Let's read David Beckham's My World, The Whole Gang, Not Jack. So, over the show, we're going to go into more depth about the book. We'll have a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end, and Ken Zong is back with yet another chance. Ooh. We missed him. We've missed him. We have missed him. We had that moment in time, which was good, but, you know. But first, let's see what Amazon is saying about Bex's book. How do we think it's been reviewed? Positively?
Well, judging by the little note in the front of Steve's book, probably very positively if it was just gifted to horny women.
it's not just horny women. Not just horny women, because by the looks of Amazon reviews, I think I'm using the correct terminology here, thirsty gay men are basically the people who have reviewed this book. It is exclusively reviews by gay men. It's got 4.2 stars out of 5. 5 stars from someone and genuinely called Steve. In his review, Beckham at his sexiest. Oh, and he plays football too. This is David Beckham at his most gorgeous. One newspaper reviewer, when the book was first published, said it was clearly aimed at gay men. It certainly hit the spot for me and still does. I don't know when he wrote this, but yeah, there we go. Steve liked it. And then another 5-star review also, and this is not a lie, from someone called Steve, saying sexiest photos of a gay icon. And it goes on like that. It goes on like that. Steve's love it. Yeah?
I feel like I've read this book wrong. I actually read it. I didn't jack off to it once.
Well, you missed out.
That's a mistake. That is a mistake.
You could have a great time. I don't ask the book back at the end. You can keep it as long as you want. Don't worry. Yeah. Or someone else can in your living room when they come round, when they find the book on the sofa. Perfect. What did you all think about those guys? Do you agree with the Steves?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed the pictures, but I actually enjoyed the words more. Can you believe? Mm. I really enjoyed it.
I can't believe.
And I will say that I now know quite a lot about David Beckham because I mistakenly read the wrong book the first time. Because
what did you read?
So the one that we're reading is called My World, and I read My Story. If you're going to release two autobiographies within 2 years, maybe differentiate them slightly. I actually read the sequel before the prequel. Both were equally enjoyable.
Okay. Hmm. Well, were we missing out on any gems from this sequel?
No. Trust me, this is the one. I think this was slightly before he got more guarded. He's a little bit more open in this one.
Okay. Oh, interesting. He is quite open. I was surprised by that as well. James, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did. I didn't really get the impression it was aimed at sort of gay men, did you? Probably the picture bit.
Well, there was something in right at the beginning I noticed. And
he mentions sexuality.
He talks about sexuality a lot in the book. Yeah.
But he's sort of like, he talks about sexuality and racism as if he's like got a gun to his head. He's like, and I am definitely not racist. And I appreciate all types of sexuality. It is all fine.
And also, he just like mentions really serious topics out of nowhere. So yeah, he says the thing about, and I'm not racist. And then he also at one point says, I don't know if I believe in God or not.
Yes. The God stuff is incredible. It is very, it is very mass appealing and it's very polished. But also, when you're mentioning aimed at a gay audience, I noticed on the back there were, even on the reviews, Evening Standard said, the words come from the hero's mouth. Fans of all persuasions will be tickled pink. So the Evening Standard kind of figured it out with that.
Yeah.
Some of the other ones from the broadsheets are quite funny. They very much picked and choose what words they want to use. ... What pictures? Like none ever published of a footballer. And then the Times has gone for the photography ... is awesome. So fill in the gaps. whatever could have come.
I don't know which version you've got, but I've got the updated re-released one with never before seen photographs in it. So I reckon they decided they were going to lean into it, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's maybe where this moody red David Beckham on the front might have come from, because it's unbelievably photo heavy. It really is. It really is. And the words I kind of thought when seeing that would come second, but yeah, I liked it.
Yeah,
the words
in it,
it's like a, it's a little historical artifact. I think, you know, when they say, when you get like Blue Peter used to do, what are they called? Time capsules. Or when they like send stuff out to them, like to space, so that aliens can hear and get a sense of what like society on Earth is like. I think they should do this. This sums up the early noughties like nothing else I've ever read before, I think. And when I was reading it, I was thinking, God, Tash is going to love every single second of this.
I know, because I think Jack was originally doing it, and then you text me and was like, sorry, Jack, I think you need to do this one.
Jack's gone. Jack's gone for the podcast forever. It's all about Steve now. It's all Steve. We don't do that. I mean, it does have some of the laziest chapter titles I've ever seen in a book. Football Days, D-A-Z-E, My First Team, Winning Ways. One's just called Euro 2000. Lazy. But
haven't said that, James. I think you're being a bit harsh, because the My First Team chapter actually isn't about his football first team. It's actually about his family. And I think that is a very heartwarming, lovely message.
It's true. I hope you can forgive me. I hope David can forgive me. It is a very good pun. It works in two ways. But Steve, we haven't asked you yet. As our guest, big Bex fan in general?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of respect for David Beckham. He was my hero growing up, and I had a signed picture of him on my he signed my calendar in 1998.
Where did you do that?
My uncle queued up at the Cliff training ground to get him to sign it. And I apparently just like ignored the other players, and I was like, Mark, we won the treble that year. You could have got the whole team to sign that. That could be worth thousands, but you just got David Beckham.
Yeah, God, you could have had David May's autograph sitting on your wall.
Wow. I know. You could have Jasper Blomqvist.
What more could a child want? What more could a child want than Jesper and David's autograph up on your wall? But did you enjoy the book? Did Beckham, did it deliver as much as you hoped it would?
Genuinely, there's two things. I don't know how you guys read these books on like week after week, because it must actually destroy your English ability. Like, your vocabulary must literally decrease reading these books. Like, the quality of writing is so bad that it honestly was making me less intelligent when I was reading it. having said that, I did enjoy it. And I actually was quite surprised at how honest he was at times. Like, he did say some pretty interesting stuff. And he obviously had a bit of an agenda with the press at the time. The press were really going for him, I think, back then. And so a lot of it is just like, this story about me is a load of rubbish. Here's what actually happened.
Yeah.
And I respected that. It was before Twitter, wasn't it? He couldn't do it on Twitter, so he had to write a whole book.
Yeah, that's why he wrote so many of these books every couple of years.
I have a theory, a hot take about this, about the social media thing. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer invented social media.
Oh, right.
I
know where you're going with this. Yeah. That's interesting.
You're right. It was before Twitter. And he says, the way to deal with the fame in the future might be through having my own website. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at United has his own website and tells fans what's going on in his life. And to put the record straight, if there are rumours or stories floating around, it would be good to have one myself.
It's true. But who didn't we read someone else's book when they were talking about perhaps it's really funny reading these books from like the early 90s. They go, oh, perhaps I will have an email address one day. Things like that. I can't remember who it was. We read someone else. Was it Owen's book? Was it one of Owen's early books, maybe?
He had a website. Maybe
Was it the very first one we read? Not Soccer Skills, the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was talking about how, maybe my fans in Hong Kong could message me one day. wouldn't that be fantastic?
But sweet.
You are. That is very interesting. And you're right with that. He definitely writes it quite angrily at times. And I was surprised by that because, like we said, he does have this very, I'm David, I'm perfect. Everyone, I love all people, I'm metrosexual, I'm all these kind of things and stuff. But if someone's wronged him, he will slag you off, whether it's an England manager or it's the neighbour who gave him a bad present when he was a kid.
He spends most of a chapter talking about how, although he's built a house in Sawbridgeworth near London, he doesn't live in it. He always lives in Manchester and he isn't like commuting between the two. He's obviously really, really sensitive about the accusation that he was commuting to training from Hertfordshire.
Yeah. That's true. It's weird how many people talk about their new developments. Gary Neville did that a lot. But was there anything in particular, Steve, that stood out from, the beginning of the book or the early days of David?
Yeah, I was quite interested. He talks a lot about his family, which is, he's obviously a very family man. He's got two sisters. He just like weirdly at one point just kind of outs his sister for sleeping with loads of London footballers. And like,
where was that? I missed that.
Yeah.
So it's on page 9. It says, Joanna's got her own friends and has her own life to lead. Unfortunately for me, she often bumps into footballers from the London clubs where she goes out, and it's a nightmare when she comes back and tells me her stories. I'm like, that. He's not saying specifically, but he is basically saying my sister is is banging David Ginola. You know, that's what he's basically saying.
Good luck to her. Good luck to her. I wish we were all that lucky.
Do you reckon then when they played each other, they were like, whoa, your sister?
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. That would be cool, yeah. His other sister gets off lightly because he just says, every Saturday she can't make it because she's at Vidal Sassoon, and Vidal Sassoon's very busy on a Saturday. Such a beautiful slice of life. Beautiful slice of life in there. Yeah.
But I want to meet Joanna Beckham. She sounds great. And if
sounds
bend
fun.
It around Beckham means a very different thing for her.
Getting filthy on here, Steve. Jack's not filthy. But hey, this is the new direction we're going in. We're going to be filthy now.
Sex
this is a literary
sells,
podcast.
Guys.
Yeah.
I've been telling them.
No, I'll drag it back from the gutter. He talks about he's obviously close to his mum and dad, although later in the book, he kind of mentions that he doesn't visit his mum and dad ever. And that he basically spends all his time with Victoria's parents. And he kind of has a little dig at his mum and dad going, I think they're annoyed about that, but they can come see me at Victoria's parents. It's like a bit weird. But he does say, he mentions his dad comes and watches him at all the games. And he's a self-employed gas engineer. And he says, it's a bit of a financial drain. He works hard and he's never missed a Saturday game. I'm like, come on, Bex, you could pay for your dad to travel to the matches.
I agree.
He shouldn't be expensing his own trips to go watch his son play for Manchester United.
Him and his dad's relationship I do quite like, though. There's a bit where he says, once I told my dad I didn't like something that United were doing, and he went, well, that's United and you're just you. I was like, I see. Yeah.
His dad does love United.
Yeah,
his dad does
definitely more than his son.
Who's a Spurs fan? Was it his granddad who's a Spurs fan in it? Yeah. I can't remember.
Yeah.
He says growing up how he was almost a Spurs, or he liked Spurs as well. But talking about being close to his family, there's one line, it's a bit later on.
I like how you just had to get that in there, James. He's
a Spurs fan. He's sometimes.
He did.
I think he was on our books when he was a kid. But he, talking about family, I think he's a bit too close to them at some bits. Because, James, you mentioned earlier how he just drops in, like, I don't know, Beckham on religion, Beckham on sex. On the sex subject, he says, one of the questions I'm often asked in interviews is whether scoring a goal is better than sex. For me, of course, sex is better, and it certainly doesn't affect my game. In my opinion, everyone should have the chance to do what suits them best. I work best when I have my family around. Does that mean he's better at sex when his family are there? That's how I interpreted that sentence. I'm not sure if that's correct or not. But
maybe that's why she flew all his family in on their secret trip to Tuscany.
To get the
she
dad
was like,
out.
It was rubbish last night. He needs his mum and dad downstairs.
cheering him on.
But his dad got there and was absolutely furious. He had to pay for all his flights.
Right, okay, let's move it away from incest. Let's move it away. As I have to say every bloody week with Jack, move it away from incest. I just cut it out
I,
when Jack
I didn't
incest.
Take it to incest. That was Tash.
It's normally me who takes it to the gutter. I'm just glad someone's beat me to it this week.
I was going to mention that Beckham has his only, he mentions like a primary school friend, and it's actually a bit of a sad moment. He says, I had one really, really good friend called John at primary school. But when we moved on, we went in different schools and sort of split up. We were never as good friends again. And then he goes on to say he made other friends, but they were never as good as John.
Yeah, it is sad. Apart from, I'm going to save it till Tash's section, just because it's a bone I want to pick with Tash about from a previous book. So yeah, get ready for that. But yeah, I know what you mean, Steve. It's weird. Like, it does flip flop every chapter. You go, I had a friend called John at school. I don't drink much, but I can remember the first time I got drunk. I love training on a Wednesday. It just goes every
You know what? The whole thing has got the feel of it as if it's like, a kid's school homework report of like what you did over the summer. That's what it feels like. It's like just skips around like, I like cranberry juice. It's just weird.
I'm not racist in any way.
Well, if I can defend him a little bit, I do feel like it was at a time when, you know, people were slagging off Beckham as being thick and stuff all the time, which I used to really hate. Because reading this book, I know you probably didn't. I don't know whether they wrote it or not. Who knows? I think he comes across as a man of the world. I think he comes across as
He does.
He's definitely not dim. He's everything's...
Since we learned a little bit more about the process of what goes into writing a football autobiography, I reckon he just sat there and he word vomited out these things and they didn't change the order. They just neatened
typed it up nicely.
And that's why maybe. It's like, wah!
And no one was complaining. They were just looking at the pictures anyway. So it doesn't really matter. It's true. He didn't have to write anything. We're glad it. But he does. I don't think he comes across as dim in it.
I actually thought, like, I know we're taking the mick out of it now, but we're looking at it 22 years in the future. I think at the time, for a footballer to come out and very publicly say, I am anti this, pro this, very liberal, very forward-looking. At the time, he's being slagged off for wearing a sarong and it would be very easy for him to retract himself.
We'll get to that sarong, but yeah.
I thought that was, you know, pretty good. If you think about what else was going on in pop culture at the time, this is very progressive.
I totally agree. And I hope you feel very bad, Steve, for making fun of him now. Okay. Your little jokes. You think we're so funny at the time, but you don't think about his feelings. David Beckham's feelings. Because he's going to listen to this. He loves the podcast.
Definitely
listens to all these kind of things on there. Steve, was there anything else you wanted to mention on young Beckham at all?
Well, he talks about when he first went to Man United, and it's actually really insightful that he went to Preston for like it seems like 5 games or something.
Yeah,
and then gets recalled back to. But he says this lovely thing where he says when he went loan to Preston, he got the option of just training with Man United and then turning up for the Preston games or training with Preston and I was like, how, obviously he did actually choose to train with Preston, but how mad would it have been if he trained with Man United and then just turned up to the Preston games? Like, hey, I'm playing today.
I agree. I thought that was mad as well. I totally forgot about that statement from the book, but you're right. Because I know sometimes like development players do that. Like they kind of go back for the odd development match, but then they still train in the week. Like training separately. That's how would you ever know what you're doing when you get on the pitch?
Exactly. How annoyed totally you'd be a Preston player.
If you were like Preston's right winger and you were training all week and helping the formation, then Beckham turns up match day and they're like, oh, fuck off, sit down, Beckham's here.
Yeah.
So annoyed.
I agree. Yeah.
Also, I really enjoyed the bit, he talks about Steve McLaren, who was the assistant manager at the time. And this is just lovely little insight. It's actually, I wish there was more details like this. He talks about a particular training exercise that Steve McLaren did with the players. And he said it was a way of keeping them interested and, you know, making training exciting. And what he'd do is line all the players up in the middle of the pitch and he would shout a command like, go left. And they would have to do the opposite of what he said. And Beckham said this was like a really exciting, fun game. Mm. And he said it's actually quite difficult. And it does sound quite a fun game. But I do think it gives a little insight into maybe what went wrong for Steve McLaren as England manager. Because if he was training his players to do the exact opposite of what he was saying, it actually would explain why they played so poorly.
Yeah, that's true. That was a mistake. My favourite thing about Steve McLaren, though, slightly differently to that, is that there's one bit where he talks about, again, because he does give him a lot of praise as a coach. He says, Steve McLaren brought in some equipment once that measured how far each player had run during a game, and I came out highest. I like the idea that the way he brings it up is just like Steve McLaren had it hanging around in his car. He was just like, Steve McLaren just brought some stuff in. Like, surely they like ordered it in from somewhere else. Steve McLaren didn't just like turn up one day and go, oh, I got this at the market. Wanna have a little try?
It sounds like Steve McLaren invented the Fitbit. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer invented Twitter. Yeah.
But a bit about Beckham being a kid that I liked was... when he said that he used to have posters of the players on his wall, and one of them was Gordon Strachan, and just the idea of David Beckham having a poster of Gordon Strachan on his wall. It's like all the millions of kids who have like poster Beckham on their walls, and he's got Gordon Strachan. It's kind of like Jack Grealish now having like Roy Hodgson on his wall.
Yeah, Lee Catamol or something on there. Yeah, I agree. It's so, because Steve Bruce was another one as well. And like Beckham, like Steve, you say, Bruce, is the ultimate poster boy.
Yeah.
And like just him looking at a picture of, no offense Steve Bruce, but you know, he's maybe not as good looking as David Beckham. I think we can say that. And I think him looking up at a wall and going, that's who I want to be like when I'm older. That's what I want to be. It's just, poor Steve. We can't talk about nostalgia and the nostalgia trip of Beckham, late 90s, early noughties, without mentioning a certain Ms. Spice, Ms. Posh Spice,
Posh.
And Tash reading this. I just knew that this was...
Normally, when these books come through the post, I'm like, honestly, James is dead to me. But when this one came through the front door, I was so excited. Like, genuinely, the biggest pop culture moment for me when I was younger was Ali G interviewing Posh and Bex. Do you remember that?
Golden
Balls.
Comic Relief.
Balls.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Does he want to grow up being a footballer like his dad, or what does he say about Pep? I've forgotten the joke. I'll move away from it. What does he say? Like a good dress, like your mum. Okay, it's like he says, like, yeah, or I can't believe it. That's a good joke.
It basically implies that she's not a very good singer.
Yeah, that's it.
Or a good singer like Mariah Carey is what he says.
Oh, that was it.
That was it. Yeah, good joke.
But I...
God, we're just so much better if I remembered it. Remember that joke?
That really great joke.
You'll know it.
So-called comedians on a podcast going, oh, what was it? How did that joke go again? Something like...
I know, it's good. Something like singing.
But I just, like, I love them so much. As you know, I reference them so much. I think for me, they are, like, iconic. And they, like, the Baden-Baden thing and everything. And this book, for me, I know I read the one after, but this one... is so good because they've only been together 3 years, but they've already got married. They've had this whirlwind romance. And you know, Steve, earlier when you said, oh God, I don't know how you read these books. It must rot your brain. But just to give you an indicator of that, I cried at this book.
Wow.
What? Is that the first time that's happened? For good reasons or bad ones?
I've ever cried at. And wow. It was the night he was like, he's describing the night of their wedding and he's like, nothing compares to what I've got with Victoria. That's why I marry her. I see her as the perfect couple. They go and like sit and look at the stars and drink champagne. And I think the reason that it really touched me was I really remember my mum going to the shop to buy the OK magazine of their wedding. And she bought two copies, one that we were allowed to read and one that we had to save as if it was like a royal wedding. They were just in my house. They were literally like
You should have got Steve's uncle to sign it. You could have taken it out to the training grounds.
And like, for someone whose vocabulary is so terrible, I think I attached a lot of personal, you know, emotion as a kid onto them. And I just loved it. I loved that chapter so much. And I just thought the way he talks about Victoria and the fact that they're still together, you know, we won't talk about the Rebecca Luce incident, but the fact that they're still together.
This is before the world even knew the name Rebecca Luce, before Pig had even been born.
Before super injunctions had even been invented.
Yeah.
Which, incidentally, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer invented super injunctions.
But yeah, I just thought that bit was really great because it's so sweet and they're still together. And the way that they talk about things, like they've just had Brooklyn at this point. So yes. Brooklyn's a small baby. And he says, you know, one day we'd like more kids. And now they've got this menagerie. And he's had two tattoos at this point, and Victoria's banned him from getting any more. And now he's like prison break. I loved that chapter. But my favourite bit, obviously, was the bit about the Spice Girls. Because it was just so funny.
Yeah.
They met in 1997, and this book was written in 2000. And Jerry left the Spice Girls in 1998, May the 31st, worst day of my life. and he sort of very carefully leaves Jerry out of what he's talking about. So he says, like, we had our first date at Mel C's house. Mel B's a big party animal. Mel C's very smart and sincere. Emma's very shy but very sweet. Jerry, nada.
Oh, I didn't think about that. He doesn't mention Jerry.
He doesn't mention Jerry.
Oh, good. But... this is the kind of thing, this is what you're good at, Tash. You always read between the lines. It's like, there's honestly about 40,000, maybe not even 40,000, but there's barely any words in this book, but still, you filled in some gaps there. Yeah. That's very good.
He does mention it early on, but it's in a bit of a...
He does very early on, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of a, like, throws a bit of shade.
Yeah.
He says that most guys normally fancy Jerry, and he was like, nah, it's all about the peanut
one. It's all about Victoria.
That bit really made me laugh, because he's like, so they say, Jerry's the one, Jeffrey, look at her, and he goes, no, believe me, the one with the dark hair, the one with the legs. I was like, they've all got legs, dude. It's not narrowing it down.
He's not
they've
picky.
All got two
not picky.
Legs.
Yeah.
But my favourite line of his discussion about the Spice Girls is where he says, I wouldn't go into a room and start a conversation with any of them, but I am relaxed enough to be in the same room as them and not sweat.
Oh, I don't remember
that's
that.
Him.
Yeah, that is not a Beckham you imagine, is it? Because again, that's quite honest. And yeah. Like the bits where he says like how he was too scared to talk about her, talk to Victoria like the first two times.
Yeah.
And she had to like come up to him and go, are you going to talk to me or not?
Are you going to talk to me?
Like, at some point you've got to talk to me.
Otherwise really, we'll never have this relationship. She really pushed this and I admire her so much because if you see a single 20-year-old David Beckham in a bar and you do not hit on him, you would lose all my respect. Like, fair enough, Victoria. Well done.
I think she was clearly going there solely to see him.
Like, why else would she be there? Because she's got no interest in
like, why would she have a box at Old Trafford? Do it again the second time.
My girl knew what she wanted and she secured that bag.
That's true. He was trying it on. She was trying it on with the wrong Beckham. If it had been his sister. Gone to a London club. Easy. Let's not say anything too bad about the sister. But talking about Brooklyn, who you described as a small baby, which I thought was a really funny description. Wasn't one of those big babies, just a little one. I've got this week's dramatic reading. Do you want to hear it?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
If I can find it. Here we go. Got it up. Can someone cue the dramatic music? Steve, as guests, will you just say the words cue dramatic music, please?
Cue dramatic music.
Ooh, okay. Perfect. That's pretty good. Different way to people usually do it. A bit more jovial, but I like it. Better than Jack. Whenever Jack does, it's terrible. Much better than Jack. You're passing the audition very, very well. Here we go. This story is called David Beckham Gets Peckish. The night before Brooklyn was born, I was playing in a big European game against Inter Milan at Old Trafford. An hour before the game, Victoria told me she had just had a twinge. I didn't know what to do because if the baby was really on its way, I'd be straight down to London to be with Victoria. Luckily, it was a false alarm and I was able to play the match. The next day, as I was on my way down to London, she told me the doctor wants us to go into hospital that afternoon. I remember it so clearly, I was eating a Lion bar at the time. The greatest way to start any kind of story about...
Also, the full line is, I was eating a Lion bar while driving on the M6, which is just very poetic.
That's true. Yeah, it really is. My mum went into child labour. That's not the right word. I went into labour. He is having a baby, but it's a very different thing to child labour. My mum went to labour watching Sports Personality of the Year 1989, but never told me what she was eating. Never once told me what she was eating.
Well, while we're on those stories, I was born 3 weeks premature because my mum was dusting the top of the wardrobe and she got a toe caught in the mattress and fell off and her waters broke and I popped out.
What?
That explains a lot. About how it all went.
My dad was born during the 1966 final. My granddad thought that this was a sign that his son was going to be a footballer. However, his granddaughter does this instead. Sorry, granddad.
Ah, interesting. Very interesting.
This is as close as he's got.
Oh, the podcast. I thought you meant they had another granddaughter who is a footballer. No. Sorry, I missed that. You're really stretching with that, Tasha. I'll be honest. You're stretching massively. But that is nice. Your dad must have the same birthday as mine, because it was my dad's 10th birthday during the 1966 final. Yeah. Anyway, Steve, you want to tell us how you were born quickly, just before we get back to the story? I feel like everyone else had a go.
No, I've got nothing. I was born in 1990 and it was June, so maybe it was during Italia 90.
Maybe.
I should look at who was playing. June 15th, Italia 90. Maybe my mum was watching a big
just
game.
Gazza's tears were strolling down his face.
Yeah.
And, out popped Steve. Out popped the booge. Driving on the M6, I was eating a Lion bar, and suddenly I felt like being sick with excitement, thinking, oh my God, here we go. Sick with excitement. Again, another thing
That's the Lion bar, though, isn't it? He's at the Lion bar too quickly.
Yeah, that's probably it. But Beckham being sick. A very difficult image to get into your head. One of the most suave men in the world.
No, he puked on the pitch once.
Did he?
Yeah, when he took the penalty. David Beckham was definitely sick on the pitch once before he took a penalty.
No picture of that in the
big
book.
Penalty.
Sadly, they missed that one out. It's a worrying time, although you're obviously hoping that things will go smoothly, which they did in the end. No drama here whatsoever. Victoria was worried about Brooklyn being all right, just like any mother with her first baby, and I was anxious, but I felt deep down that everything was going to be okay. I was there during the cesarean and saw everything, and all the while, Victoria kept saying how hungry she was. What is it with these guys and food? All the way through it. We both go through phases of liking certain foods, and at that point, she was into salmon. All she could talk about during the pregnancy was how she couldn't wait to have some salmon, which was... then I saw Brooklyn's head came out and heard him crying. as Posh was talking about salmon, Victoria couldn't hold him because the anaesthetic for the cesarean meant she couldn't feel anything from the neck down, so I was the first to hold him, and it was unbelievable. It was weird, the best feeling in the world, and like nothing I ever felt before. So there we go. Ah. What is it with footballers and these chaotic birth stories? We had Sean Goethe, didn't we?
Oh, the Sean Goethe.
That was worse. Yeah, Sean
Goethe. I would like to just dispel a common myth about Brooklyn Beckham.
Okay.
He was not conceived in Brooklyn.
Mm.
He was conceived in Denmark, and they found out she was pregnant in Brooklyn. Just for you fat hunters out there. Mm-hmm.
One of my favourite pastimes is to go onto Brooklyn Beckham's Instagram.
Oh, it's so good.
Because he's just a man. He's just a man desperately trying to find his purpose in life. And he's doing it in the eye of the world. And he, at the moment, is doing a series called Cooking with Brooklyn Beckham. And it involves him meeting up with actual people who can cook, like actual chefs. And they basically cook, and he just watches them cook, and that's the whole series.
Do you remember his photography book? Though?
Yes. Yeah.
He's just trying to find a job. But the other day, it was before Christmas, he put one up, and he's driving in a car, and it's, I think it's Driving Home for Christmas is playing or something.
Okay.
And he looks at the camera, and he's like, oh, this is my favourite Christmas song. And he sings one line, and then he visibly does not know the rest of that song. It's so funny.
Was he eating a lime bar in that video by any chance? Was he? No. Yeah, like father, like son.
He's getting married this year. It's very exciting. And my mum is buying a hat. She's very excited.
She's buying a copy of OK on the day. Okay, to go with the other ones. You can get all the Beckhams through the years. That'd be lovely. Here's my bone. I've got two bones to pick, actually, quickly, just while we're on the subject, before we go to a break. First bone to pick with Tash. A year ago or so, we read the Neville's book for Club and Country. You know where this is going, I hope. And you were going, Gary Neville loves David Beckham.
He's got a big horn. He's got a big crush on him.
That's exactly what you said. Yeah. And you're right. I don't disagree with that. However, I don't think we gave Neville enough credit for quite how much Beckham feels the same way in return as well. Because Beckham, Tash is nodding along.
I definitely thought that it was a one-way street, but it is quite reciprocated and it's quite sweet, actually.
He was the best man at the wedding.
He let him choose his tattoo in that episode, but
he did get on really with him, but he was not John from primary school.
No,
he was not. He wasn't ever the same as that.
Yeah, that's very true. That is very true. But he says, I talked to Gary about personal things. He's always there to give me advice, and he's always there if I'm worried about something. That's why we're such good friends. When I had problems with Alex Ferguson, Gary was the only one I spoke to about it all. He's like the brother I never had.
But what about his other?
Luckily, not like his sister. talking about the tattoos, there's a really quite sweet moment where he gets Brooklyn's name tattooed on his back, but gets it quite big. And then he does this little sort of footnote. He sort of says, I've decided if I have future kids, I'm going to get their names tattooed as well, but it won't be as big a font because I can't have that many big names on my back. And it's like poor other kids like Romeo Cruz, like they're going to just tiny little Paul Harper's written in Wingdings. Like, it's so tiny.
Well, maybe her middle name's Seven, and he's already got a Seven on his arm, hasn't it? Maybe that's why they gave him that because it's already there.
He could just call it one of his kids Huge Cross on My Neck, because everyone just had to just go. That kind of covers
wings,
kind of,
little baby wings.
Little baby wings. Anyway, there'll be more vintage. I'll bring my other bone to pick later. It's not with you, Tash. Don't worry. It's not with Jack either. We can all chill now. That's me. I've vented it. And we will be back after the break with more vintage Becks, including Diego Simeone, Eileen Drury, and sarong shopping with a Spice Girl spouse. It's hard to say. Hi, we're Football Book Club Podcast, and we need your support now. Let's drop the appeal music. Hi everyone, James here, and I just want to tell you about the brand new Football Book Club Club, which you can join to receive bonus weekly episodes, access to exclusive member events, and your very own Football Book Club book bookmark, all for the same price as a used copy of Darren Huckabee's 2007 book, Hucks. So if you enjoy the podcast and need to hear more afterwards, head to patreon.com/footballbookclub. Enjoy the episode. Welcome back to Football Book Club. We're reading David Beckham's My World with Steve Bajaya. How are you doing, Steve? Still enjoying it? Still a big fan? Still a big fan of Becks?
I'm I'm really enjoying this. I actually think dissecting the book has meant me enjoy it more.
Okay, that's good. That seems to happen quite a bit. During the break, James was doing some pretty important research into whether David Beckham has been sick on the pitch. Has he been sick, James?
Yeah, World Cup 2006. There's a Guardian story here. Beckham wilts in the heat and throws up on the pitch.
Beautiful. Yeah. Share that on our socials. People want to see a picture of that, I guess. That'll be a nice little way to... Yeah, follow us on socials. You get to see all that kind of content. Who's gotten out of context? David Beckham.
Me.
At least two of us are definitely going to have the same one. All right.
Yeah. Okay, there's some filthy ones in there. But let's go. Steve, as our guest, you can kick off.
I've got a little book in which I've written down the names of those people who upset me the most. I don't want to name them because I want it to be a surprise when I get them back. I know I will get them someday.
What the hell? I can't remember that.
That is a great line.
What
and
the hell, David?
I might blow the context later because that comes up a little bit in the section I want to talk about in a second. But that was a very unexpected moment from David Beckham.
Just out of nowhere. Just really so innocent.
He's got a burn book. I love it.
Imagine how incriminating that must be. The fact that he's written seven other books and published all of them, but this one just can never see the light of day. We know he loves to release them.
He's going to drop it, like, the day that he dies, he's going to get it published in, like, the third page of the Times. It's going to be amazing.
My End. That'll be what it's called.
That bitch next door used to give us crap Christmas presents,
yeah,
number one.
Yeah, the first one. She was the first one gone. That is one of the meanest bits of the book. There's a few little bits of that where it's just like, Beckham seems very humble throughout, apart from the odd moment where he, you know, does a reverse Jenny from the block and Jenny forgets where he comes from. There's one bit with Victoria Beckham, which you just reminded me of, where he says, we were both successful and could relate to each other as equals. That was it. Suggesting that people who aren't successful are not equal to him. David Beckham. That's not my out of context. I've got another one for you. Tash, let's hear yours.
I used to have a dummy and one day my mum told me the rabbits had eaten it. Just thought it was funny.
Good one. That is a good one.
And that's why he doesn't like rabbits anymore.
I forgot that. He doesn't like rabbits. You're right. Yeah, he loves everyone else. It doesn't matter what religion you are, what sexuality, as long as you're not a rabbit. Yeah, or cats.
Or a cat. Cats
either. Yeah, let's not. There's already enough sad things of footballers and cats going on at the moment. Let's not bring that up. Move on quickly. James Bowden, out of context?
Yeah, I have a camera at my backside almost 24 yes. hours a day.
Yes, that was one of my ones on my list. Because... Look, you know, okay, if this book is really as successful, as popular as he suggests it is with gay men, I feel like he has put a few entendres in there. I've got one which was, it was tougher in the European Games. I think I might have been because I was double teamed a bit more. That was one I had in there. Water sports are out of the question at the moment. That's another one in there.
He makes it very easy to like write fanfic about him, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
You could definitely do a bit of like... fan erotica from this book. I'm sure
easily.
There's a few spin-offs.
Easily. Well, yeah, there we go. Maybe we'll do that in the bonus chapter at the end.
Tash's is James going to do it in his fanfic. Sexy ASMR voice?
Oh, I'd like that. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good idea. Let's save that. Make sure you join the Football Book Club, www.patreon.com/footballbookclub. Anyway, my topic I want to bring up is something which we've touched upon a few times because, as we all know, Beckham, one of the defining moments in his career, it was the whole Simeone nonsense when he gave Diego a little kick and we went out of the World Cup and it wasn't very happy. However, for me, the interesting stuff is Glenn Hoddle, because David Beckham absolutely hates Glenn Hoddle. He cannot stand it. Am I wrong in saying that? I think that's what came across to me.
No, yeah, I got the same impression.
He really doesn't. And it's something which we've had a few times in books, because I can't remember who, but we've read a few books like, I think Letizia couldn't stand him because he scored that hat-trick, didn't he, in the B team just before the World Cup and then didn't get in the squad. And then there's a few other ones we've had. I think Phil Neville didn't like him, right? Because of the way he treated him when he picked him, when
yeah,
he made everyone
right.
go.
Yeah,
we've definitely had it come a few times.
Beckham talks about that. He mentions Phil Neville. In that
yeah, book. He's very supportive of him because he makes everyone go off into different rooms.
And like queue up to come find out whether they're in the squad.
Yeah, and then obviously there's the whole famous Gazza smashing things up. And Beckham's very pro Gazza, very team Gazza with that in the thing. But it's very interesting because it goes into more depth than I think we've had someone in before on what, for such a small book, it's quite surprising, on what actually happened in the camp. And it is like it's a bit of a dystopian, like, you know, state almost going in there. They're not allowed to read newspapers is one thing they're not allowed to do. He's got his like his Rasputin style kind of wizard assistant in Eileen Drury. Which I think has to be mentioned in any footballer who played in that time has to mention their meeting with Eileen Drury. And his one is just as mad as all of them. I think he says, I went in and she stuck her hands on my head and my face. We just chatted about things, but I didn't feel any sensations except that her hands were really warm. There we go. So that's what he took. That's what he took from meeting, what was she, like a medium or a spiritualist? Yeah. I don't know what she was.
She's
anyway.
Psychic, isn't she?
Yeah, that is basically it. But he says like how him and Owen were sat on the bench throughout. And he kind of says all that built up frustration of being sat there and, you know, having not been able to read the paper and having Eileen Drury touch his face. That kind of is what spilled out onto the pitch when he kicked Simeone. And we haven't, it kind of, I found that really interesting because we've never really had that side of things before. I mean, what do we all think of that section? Are we all
interested? Well, he said he was like dropped. He said he was dropped from the first game, even though he played in every single qualifier. So he was upset about that against Tunisia. And he blames that on the kick, doesn't he? He says the kick was like a build up of all the frustration of being dropped from that game. And all the other stuff at the camp. And yeah, I've never heard him say that. It's really interesting.
It surprised me. I mean, James, we've done, and Tash as well, we've done quite a few England players of that time, but I don't remember anyone being quite as frustrated. And that's what surprised me. I didn't think this was going to be like that at all. I thought I'd just go, Glenn Hoddle, cool. Keegan, cool. Actually,
well,
he really likes
Kevin
Keegan.
Especially because in the rest of the book, he generally is quite middle of the road and everything.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, so, yeah. Definitely.
But I know I have a slight advantage because I have read the next book. He gets progressively angrier, so I'm intrigued as to, like, book number 7, he's probably absolutely enraged.
What, about Glenn Hoddle?
About everything.
It's
a lot more... You know how when we were doing the Owen books and we saw that progression? That was going on in the Beckham book as well. Like, he got a lot more serious and a lot more kind of frosty and caged, I would say, in the second one. So, yeah, maybe this is a peek into how it would continue.
Are you saying we need to do a septology? Or something like we did the Owen trilogy. We're going to do seven Beckham books.
Four Owen books.
Yeah, in the end.
Yeah, no, I can't. I'm sorry. I love David Beckham, but not that much.
There is
that's like
an
Harry
incredible,
Potter, isn't it? Seven.
That would be. Yeah.
And then there's the David Beckham musical as well.
Yeah, that's chick. Yeah. Yeah, don't hit the Broadway. Yeah, there's a. I don't know how they're going to get a Fantastic Beasts like spin-off out of one of these books, like a little Gary Neville story somewhere.
Surely that's Bend It Like Beckham, no?
Oh, true. That is true. Yeah, Bend It Like Beckham. Forgot about that. Yeah. Also, there was a game on Game Boy called Go Go Beckham. I remember. Anyway, a lot of Beckham stuff. The one good thing that comes out of that Simeone kick, though, as well, because I think we're all got traumatic memories, I'm sure, of World Cup 98. But one good thing that comes from it is his conclusion to that whole experience was when he's back in the change room and Tony Adams says something really nice to him about, don't you ever think you let us down, which is really sweet. I thought, you know, I don't usually give credit to an Arsenal player. If Jack was here, he'd be lapping that up. But he's not. and he goes, that was rock bottom because the whole experience hit me. I'm quite an emotional person. I cried watching the film Armageddon and I get a lump in my throat just watching some reunion on a show like Surprise, Surprise. But what strange references. But I had not cried like I did then since I was a child. For a good 10 minutes, I just lost it. I didn't cry anything like that again until I heard I was going to be a dad. So there we go. Big things that hit him, kicking Simeone, going to be a dad and watching Cilla Black's Surprise, Surprise. That was the things that really cut through on Beckham. Oh, very interesting. I mean, Owen obviously wouldn't talk about watching Armageddon. He would, no films for Owen. That would clear that. But I found that whole section interesting. I found it interesting that he really likes Kevin Keegan because I think we had other books before. I think David Seamans, for example, he slagged off Kevin Keegan. So there's a real divide on who likes that kind of arm around your shoulder Keegan approach and who likes the more, I don't know.
Do you
perhaps...
guys find that, like, when we read these books, it colours your opinion of people? Because I really do.
for me, Hoddle's untouchable anyway. Not just because he's a Spurs legend, but because he was on the Masked Singer as a grandfather clock. That helped me. I acknowledge he's got his faults, Glenn Hoddle. But I think we should make a tally of this in the future. Try and get who's on this old Keegan divide, because I think it's really,
I reckon it's like
quite telling.
A spectrum we could create, like the Top Gear hot and cold wall.
Who goes on that? Yeah, well, there's an idea.
This sounds like another Jack investigation to me.
Yes, it does.
No, forget about that. Steve investigations from now on. No Jack investigation.
Who is this Jack guy you keep mentioning?
exactly.
I want to talk about is there's a chapter called Fame and Fortune where he goes into his life as a celebrity, the sort of positives and negatives of it.
Mm-hmm.
We will get to the sarong because I want to talk about that. I want I want Tasha's nice. View on that.
Building the suspense. But it's coming.
What fascinated me the most about this whole bit is probably a section you didn't even think about. So he gets like loads and loads of fan mail, and he says that he just employed someone at Old Trafford to read it for him. And I was just like, I was fascinated with that job. Like, is that like on top of her job? Is she doing it secretly? Like, what? She's working like the ticket office, and then he's just like paying her on the side. Like, can you look through these? And she spends all. Is it something she like does at home? So he like does like a van drop off sacks of like letters at her home. It really fascinated me.
Yeah,
like, and is he like paying like the room hire in Old Trafford as well? For like it's quite an expensive operation.
Yeah, like that would take a while. She has to read them all. Yeah, it just fascinated me.
Did he say she is?
He just said someone who works at Old Trafford.
Wow.
And I employed them to do this.
That's not a bad job. I wouldn't say it's a bad job.
It's a really good job. It's a perfect job.
Yeah.
Imagine that. It's just like you're reading through like the fan mail of like one of the most famous people in the world. Like, imagine how cool that would
be. Imagine the
pictures. Well, you internalize some of it. Would you be like, oh, I'm the most amazing. All these people keep sending me letters that say I'm the most amazing person in the world.
I think it'd be a dangerous job for perverts. Because he says at one point how many bras and new pictures he gets sent through and
that's
stuff
the
like
thing.
That.
Like, if there's loads of underwear getting sent, she's like, oh, these fit me.
Sick, right, well,
sweet.
This is nice.
Maybe that's how he's paying her.
But he also
keep anything you want.
He also mentions that she has to sort of sort through the bad, like the insulting mail, and get rid of it for him, like bin it. So actually, I don't think it is that good a job because she has to like read everything and go, okay, that's nice. Oh, that calls him a prick. Okay, let's put that in the bin.
Yeah, over again.
Which sick kid do you decide is going to get the phone call off in that week? Like, that must be a hard job. You know?
I thought that was really sweet. That is true. It is like, he has got like, sometimes the most deserving gets a phone call. And I thought, first of all, that's really sweet that Beckham does even call some people.
Yeah.
But imagine that. Like, you just sat at home and the phone's ringing and Beckham's on there. God.
He said him and Victoria went to visit somebody at their home, some terminally ill girl. Imagine them just rocking up at your house.
Do you remember that bit in the book as well? I just remembered where someone, I think this is
I think
the book.
You're going to say my favourite bit in the whole book now.
Is it when...
the wardrobe.
Yeah, when someone comes to buy the wardrobe.
I loved it so much.
And from Victoria's parents or something like that, isn't that right? And then they just sat in the background. They kind of come in and go, oh, is the wardrobe... Hang on, is that Beckham?
And he walks in with Brooklyn on his knee, and
imagine buying a cupboard on Facebook Marketplace.
You would just think you were being punked, like, wouldn't you? You'd think you were on like Saturday Night Takeaway or something, and you were about to get gunged.
Well, Rio Ferdinand's World Cup pranks.
Rio's World Cup wind-ups.
World Cup wind-ups. You'd be murked,
you got murked. Yeah, that's all I can think of.
And also in that episode, in that show, Beckham got murked and he had to like run out of a car in the middle of Princess Parkway in Manchester into Moss Side. It was like mad.
Yeah. He dealt with it really well though, because I think it was it Ashley Cole who was like had quite an attitude. He obviously like fell for it and he had like an attitude. He was like, yeah, I'm like a very good footballer and stuff. And he was like talking himself up. But Beckham was like really polite. It was that taxi driver, wasn't it? Like a fake taxi driver.
Yeah. And he was taking
a really
long
way, and he was really late for whatever he was supposed to be at. And he was really polite about it, and in the end, he had to like escape out of the taxi. Yeah, it was funny.
I bit my tongue then, James.
Can't you remember that?
You were giving me a dead eye then.
With what? Fake taxi? Is that what you were going to get? I feel like we're on that line. Come on. Jack's away. Let's get filthy. God. Down with Jack.
I didn't mention it.
No, you didn't. That's true. It is Tash.
It's an equation. Even through the camera on here, James was looking at me like, don't you dare.
I mean,
I don't know what you're even talking about. I don't know what that is. What the fake taxi? Never heard of any of this in my life. Never. Trying to keep my voice down in case my neighbours hear this. I've got a reputation to keep up. James, sarong story, quickly.
So Let's get the sarong thing. It was quite a seminal moment, wasn't it? A seminal David Beckham moment. And everyone sort of is aware of it, but it doesn't seem like that big a deal now, obviously. But, I mean, what are your memories of it?
Oh, thank you.
No, because I just remember it's one of the things that you associate with Beckham, and it's like Beckham wears a sarong, you know, Beckham wearing girls' clothes or whatever, and it's just like, why was that so ingrained in our minds?
This probably shaped Tash's life probably more than our one. I'm sure her mum's got a picture of this somewhere.
Oh yeah. Oh my God, I remember it so vividly, and the headscarf and everything. Mm. I think it was one of the first sort of moments of like a male figure that was not sort of seen as fluid, wasn't a David Bowie type figure, wearing something that was like metrosexual, which at the time was just sort of happening.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So someone who's in such and a such a, you know, typically masculine, macho,
masculine industry.
I guess like Dennis Rodman, probably around similar kind of similar time, I guess. Yeah, yeah, probably.
Yeah,
quite.
Yeah, but like it was just, I just remember the uproar about it. But then I don't know. I don't really remember it being negative. I remember it being sort more like, oh, he's a bit wacky. And now he's got a Mohican. It was that sort of like,
yeah,
he was always doing these sort of style things. Whereas maybe in your world where it was more about the kind of football lads, was it different?
I mean, at first, thank you for treating us as though...
I'm glad you think we're part of a laddie world.
That's great.
Because we're not.
Sweet, sweet. We're lads, guys. We did it. We made it. I don't know. What were we, like 12? I just remember...
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, we're 12-year-old boys. Were they a bit more like, you know...
I think we were all wearing them. Came over the 6th grammar school Chelmsford. Afterwards, we were all...
I had a Wendy house till I was 10, so I couldn't take the mick out of wearing it so wrong.
yeah, I think we were always going to turn a bit of blind eye to it. But it is a highlight of the book, James. Is that one of your favourite segments?
Yeah, I mean, so I think part of the backlash was a lot. I remember a little bit from the time is people saying that Victoria dresses him.
Yeah,
and he's keen to dispel that in this book. So he says Victoria's never told me what to wear. Obviously, she buys things for me, but I bought the infamous sarong when I was out with Mel B's ex-husband Jimmy in Paris. Which I think was a prelude to Emily in Paris. in
Mel
fact,
B's
I liked it so much.
Jimmy in Paris. Wow.
Jimmy in Paris.
Netflix, snap it up.
He said he liked it so much he bought it in several different colours, and Jimmy bought a couple of as well. Who is this Jimmy?
We don't talk about Jimmy. He's our Bruno. We don't talk about him.
Our Bruno? Who's the other Bruno? I'm confused.
Bruno.
I don't know what
have
you're talking
about. Have you seen Encanto?
If Jack was here, he'd happening? Know what we were talking about.
Jack,
no idea.
Jack could be all over it. It's, it's,
and that's the reason why Jack's not on the podcast anymore, because his
we
nerdy
were having a little
references.
Sing-song
we're
last
lads.
Time.
We are lads now. We Encanto don't have Jack's nerdy Encanto singing on the thing. Tash, you're on a thin line. If you want to be like Jack next time, I'll replace you. We'll get Maisie Adam in again. It'll be Steve, me, Maisie Adam, and James.
If you replace us, it'll be like Theseus's ship or Sugar Babes. It'll be like Sugar Babes.
That's a much better reference for me. Sugar life. Babes. Yeah, Theseus's ship. Yeah, that's we haven't got highbrow on this podcast. Sugar Babes. We stick with that. Yeah, I remember
the one time I bought Mark Twain up and you nearly booted me off.
Yeah, that reflects badly on me. You never hear about Mel B's ex-husband Jimmy's sarong. No one ever remembers those pictures, do they?
No, but
I mean, I guess he's significantly less famous.
I don't know. I respect him for it. I think it's cool. Like, because he doesn't just talk about wearing the sarong. He says, like, yes, I wore the sarong. That was one thing. But actually, I'm into wearing things that just make me feel good. And there's a bit where he talks about wearing pantaloons at a wedding and stuff. Mm. And he obviously just likes experimenting with clothes. And now it's not such a big deal. But then again, like, it's quite, I think it's quite cool that he talks about it.
I agree. And this is what kind of made me not change my opinion, because I never thought he was that kind of like, oh, dumb Beckham, like he used to get portrayed in the mean press and stuff like that. But like, I found those bits really interesting. Like, there's one bit where he says, I probably would have gone to art school if I hadn't been a footballer, which I found, you know, much like his artist son, Brooklyn Beckham. But I found it really interesting, all that kind of stuff, because it does change your opinion about it. And it shows that I don't think he's just saying it for the sake of it. I think he generally does. He really is interested in that. And it shows a bit more, you know, depth than a lot of players. Beckham good, journalist bad. That's like basically what
I
was
getting at. Yeah, I don't think he's stupid. I think he's definitely shy.
Not. Yes.
I think his shyness comes across as kind of a vulnerability that he doesn't, you know, really have. He's actually really smart.
And he's got some great pictures. Great pictures in the book.
So, in reality, he's the perfect guy for like that sort of Heat magazine era, because he's gorgeous and he doesn't say much.
Yeah. You
know? To be fair, if anyone want, you know, if anyone's going to fill half their book with pictures, he's the guy to do it, isn't it?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
If Steve Bruce did it, yeah, it would be a different story.
Yeah.
Beckham's just, he's a beautiful specimen. His
Imagine the audacity if, like, I don't know, whose books we've read so far? Darren Huckabee, half of his book was just like photos of him.
He had a bit of
like,
a sort of Beckham look. He was a bit like a.
He did, yeah.
And,
it's true.
AliExpress,
do you know who I can
imagine? Maybe Huckabee
doing
was a bad example of that. Letitia. There we go.
I can imagine Karen Brady's husband doing that.
Mm, Paul Pesci-Salido.
Yeah, I reckon he'd give himself half a book of photos.
I wish Paul Pesci-Salido would hurry up and write a bloody book so we can do it on the show. I love Paul Pesci-Salido. Anyway, the book comes to an end. It kind of looks to the future post-Euro 2000. And something I totally forgot about, talking about how he's preparing for Fergie to leave. I totally forgot that he was going to retire. And then he was like, 12 more years. He stayed
yeah,
for
yeah.
That kind of Wolf of Wall Street style. He's like, I'm not going anywhere.
There's that
the
bit
king
where
is dead.
He says at one point how Fergie doesn't like slag his players off. But then later on he goes, oh yeah, he said publicly that I've lost my sense of fun or something. And I was like, that's a bit of a harsh thing to say. Like, Beckham doesn't have fun like he used to.
He's a gaslighter.
Remember that bit.
Gaslighter, Fergie. 100% a gaslighter. Steve, I mean, you probably don't like this Alex Ferguson slander, do you, I'm guessing? So maybe I should move on.
It was largely positive, I thought, about Alex Ferguson. It didn't...
Yeah.
But this is
yeah,
before this is before the boot kick in at the Real Madrid exit.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But hey, when we get into the next book in our Beckham septology, then we'll hear more. So did this book change you? Did this book change you, everybody? Steve, as our guest, did it change you?
Actually, yeah, a little bit, because the way he talks about his love of Victoria and that kind of the passion he has for his wife when he first met her, it's making me question whether I've ever been in love and whether I'm ever going to feel that much happiness, because he's so happy and so besotted with her. I'm like, I'm 31 and I don't think I've ever felt it. And am I ever going to feel it? You know, it's actually been quite a horrible, horrible realization, actually.
Oh, God. God, what a sad note to end the episode on. There we go. Let's bring back Jack, I say. Bring back Jack. He wouldn't say
oh,
that.
Married and loved up Jack with a kid. Yeah, bring him in.
Rating out 10, Steve, what would you give it?
I'd give it a solid 6.5.
Oh, we're adding things in. Okay, that's fine. It's going to test.
Okay, no, sorry.
No, 6.5. We'll keep it 6.5. It's all good. James Balgen, did it change your life? And what's your score?
Yeah, I liked how progressive he was being back in 2001. I've always liked Bex. He's good. He's a good lad. And I enjoyed it. Pictures, nice.
Yep.
Learned that Gary and Phil are always there right on time. That was something I learned. 8 out of 10.
8, good.
Yeah.
I was going to say 8 as well, because I found this a real throwback, and I really, really enjoyed it, because it was one of those books by, you can't argue with Beckham, can you? He defined all our childhoods. And
yeah, he's a good lad.
It gave me everything I wanted and a little bit more. So 8 from me. Tash?
I loved it, mostly because it was one of the few football books that we've done that I actually wanted to read.
Yeah.
I didn't have to force myself. And then it was more than I expected.
Exactly, yeah.
So I would also give it an 8, actually.
There you go. Look at that. Look at that. Steve, you want to change your mind?
I feel bad.
The Manchester United fan.
Yeah.
Give it
I was told to go first. I didn't know what your barometer was. I didn't know. I mean, obviously,
trust
on the scale
me,
of
we've
books.
We've read some shockers, so this is
yeah, but like, I haven't. I've read actual books. And on the scale of actual books, this is not an 8. There's no way it's an 8. I was being generous with a 6, but you guys are judging it against Robbie Savage's book or something. So it's difficult. Can I upgrade mine a bit? Can I go to 7?
No, I think it got 7.675 or something like that on average. Usually might use just quickly on the top of my head. I think that's right. So that's pretty good. That puts him in second place, I think.
Second
Jamie Vardy.
Second place, yeah.
On the leader.
Whatever.
No, no, not ever. No, never. But it's just not far off second, is it? But yeah, it's on there. So that's been done very good. So straight in above Robbie Earnshaw. There we go. So this week's quiz. This week's quiz. You're all named after people a teenage Beckham had a poster of on his wall. So Steve, you're Brian Robson. Tash, you're Gordon Strachan. And James, you are Steve Bruce. You knew you were going to be Steve Bruce, didn't you? You knew you were going to be Steve Bruce. No, anyway. Steve. If you think you know the answer, shout your name out. Whoever says it first gets to answer the question. Question number one. Where was David and Victoria Beckham's first date?
Gordon Strachan.
Gordon Strachan.
Elsie's house.
I don't think that is right. I think what's their first proper date? I don't think that is correct, Tash. I think.
No, their first proper date.
Brian Robson. Brian Robson.
Yeah, Brian Robson's in. Brian Robson's in.
He takes her out in London. He goes down to London to take her out.
That is true, but what do they go? What do they do on the date? What do they do on
cinema.
The date?
Cinema. They go to the cinema in London.
That's it. I'll give you a bonus point if anyone can name the film they go see.
They go to watch. It's Jerry Maguire. Jerry Maguire.
Show me the answer. 1 point to Steve.
Oh my God! No, I get 2 points. Surely.
Sorry, 2 points. You do. Oh, right. Blimey. You praise Jack quite well because Jack gets weirdly pedantic. Yeah. Pretty good. Question number two: which Brazilian does Beckham swap shirts with at Le Tournoi? Who then apologised for remarks he apparently said about him?
Brian Robson.
Yep.
That is Roberto Carlos.
Very good. Very. You did pay attention to this book. Yep. At least he thinks he does. He doesn't understand what he says, so he assumes it's an apology at that point. Name any of the films or shows David Beckham watches on his portable DVD player.
Brad Robson.
Gordon Strachan in first.
I know his favourite actors, so I'm going to make an educated guess, because his favourite actors are Hugh Grant, Sandra
questions.
Bullock.
The next question is,
I knew it was going to be.
His favourite actress is. But no, what did you say? Sandra Bullock, Hugh Grant, and who?
Can I have it? Hugh Grant, yeah.
Julia Roberts.
That was the one. That was the one that I knew was going to be in the quiz that I was going to get right, and it's gone.
Let's get back on track. Tash has got a point. I'll give him Steve a point for shouting out Julia Roberts. All right, James, you get a point.
Can I answer your actual question?
Brian Robson. Yeah, Brian Robson. Let's go back. Name any of the TV shows or films he likes. You're saying Friends.
Brian Robson. Friends.
Yep.
And.
yeah, Friends is correct. Anything else?
Gordon Strachan.
Yep.
Surely Notting Hill is in there.
It's not. He does like films, though. A big cinephile. Well, I say that. The next film he's got. If anyone can get it, no.
Oh, it's a weird one.
It's Jack Frost, the film where Michael Keaton dies and then comes back to life as a snowman. Weird. Also, on films, there's something I wanted to mention before. On page 44, there's a really weird moment where he's talking about his Christmas. I'm not sure if he's joking or being serious, but he says...
Oh, and he watches that weird film.
Yeah, he says, we'd all sit down and watch the Christmas movie, films like Someone's Nicked the Dinosaur. I don't know if that's a joke, but the film is actually called One of Our Dinosaurs is Missing. That's a real film. I've been watching that a lot as a kid, so I don't know if that's a joke or he's misremembered the name of the film. There's no film called Someone's Nicked the Dinosaur, Beckham. Come on. That's embarrassing. Okay, we've done question five because you all rudely jumped in and answered it before. The next question, Steve is way in front. I don't think anyone can catch him. Which British sporting legend snubs a young Beckham for an autograph?
Oh, fuck.
I didn't know this as well.
I think he won a sports personality of the year my mum went into labour.
Brian Robson.
Yep.
Is it Nigel Mansell?
No. I don't think you're going to get it. I'll give you athletics.
Yeah.
Daley Thompson is the answer.
Yes. Daley Thompson. It shaped his view of him, didn't it? Mm-hmm.
And finally, who does David have a spontaneous night out at a gay bar in the south of France with?
Oh.
It's
Gordon Strachan.
Yep.
Elton John.
Not correct.
Oh,
it's much more naff. It's much more naff. It's brilliant. It's somewhere I would love to have been. Love to have been a fly on the wall.
Can you give us a clue?
Yeah, she was on I'm a Celebrity before. She's a journalist. She pops up on a lot.
Brian Robson, Janice Reporter.
Janice Reporter is correct.
What the hell?
That would have been hilarious. Oh my God.
Steve. Oh, incredible. Sorry, Brian Robson / Steve Bajaya has destroyed it. Well done, Steve. Well done. Very good first showing. And as a reward, you get this week's Ken Zong. So you all know Ken. Steve, I think you met Ken in real life, actually.
He's a real person. Steve can vouch for
it. I don't believe he exists. I've never met him.
Me and Steve went to Sweden and we printed off our tickets on his printer at his house, remember?
That's true.
So he comes on and he gives us a little chant every single week, another footballer that's long since retired. This one to the tune of Ed Sheeran, Shape of You. You like the sound of that, Steve? I know you're a big Ed Sheeran fan as well.
I'm trying to figure out who it is already from that.
Okay, have a little think. We're in love with the game with you. You're the gaffer who scores goals too. Is there anything you can't do? Oh, Gianluca Vialli. Every night you put on the blue. And now the squad all looks up to you. Every game you pull out something else brand new. Oh, Gianluca Vialli. Ooh. Everybody?
Gianluca Vialli.
Very specific to the late noughties Chelsea, that one. Yeah, that is Ken. That's Ken. Anyway, that's all for this week's episode, but we'll be back in a fortnight. If you can't wait 2 weeks, make sure you join the Football Book Club Club, where you receive 20 minutes more Football Book Club every other Monday, plus your very own Football Book Club bookmark. Head to patreon.com/footballbookclub for that. We're going to read some more Becks right now, which will be coming out to the club on Monday. Steve, you going to hang around for that?
Yes.
Gun to
like
his head.
David Beckham writing about racism. Yes.
Thanks for joining us, Steve. You had a great
time.
Thank
you so much for having me. Yeah, I've had a lovely time.
Loved having you on. Please stay and replace Jack in the future. Anything to plug? Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, I should say I'm going on a stand-up tour in May, June, July. Come watch me. Or come find me on my socials. Steve Buggerja. B-U-G-E-J-A.
Buggerja. Ooh, nice pronunciation.
I mean, it's Bougeja, but...
Bougeja and Bug. Yep. Together again.
Yeah. That's great. Is it all up and down the country?
Yes, all the big cities.
Chelmsford.
Also, go watch Buffering on ITV Hub. That's it. That's enough plugs now.
There we go. Two good plugs. That's more than we gave Gideon Balague. In the meantime, make sure you get in touch with us on Twitter, at Footy Book Club, Instagram, at Football Book Club, or on Facebook. I can't speak today. Or on Facebook. Send us your thoughts, author, footballer puns, chant ideas, or if you've got anything else for us, any last words, everybody?
Spice up your life.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Natasha Frisco, James Balgin, and Steve Bougeja. It was produced and created by James Bug. Thanks to David Beckham for writing the book, but where are they all now? Well, David Beckham retired in 2013, but has since bought a football team, got loads more tattoos, and celebrated 22 years of marriage to Victoria. He remembers because he was eating a bounty bar. Brooklyn Beckham went on to become one of the world's most celebrated photographers, winning praise in particular for his photo, Out of Focus Elephant. Mel B broke up with her husband, Jimmy, in 2000, unrelated to the sarong, as far as we know. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer went on to found Tesla and invent Bitcoin. And One of Our Dinosaurs is Missing is a real film with a disappointing 5.9 out of 10 on IMDb. The theme music, Hills Behind, is the work of Silent Partner and is used in a Creative Commons 4.0 license. We'll be back soon with more autobiography action. Until then, see ya.